There are a couple of questions along similar lines, but you said that the key to this is Jesus' resurrection. What evidence is there for the resurrection?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. It's really, really important that you think that question matters. The gospel writers don't write in the manner of, we hope that you think this sounds nice and that you'll just believe it in your heart. They want you to believe that it's objectively true. And Luke, at the start of his gospel, writes, framing himself as a historian, footnoting his sources, and saying the aim is to give you certainty about all the things, including the resurrection. One of the keys to this is the New Testament is unlike any document on the historical record in antiquity. So there's some things that you probably think you know about that are kind of well attested about certain Roman emperors and things going on at that time, often based on a very small number of manuscripts about whoever, and often from hundreds of years later that anything has first been written down. The New Testament is unlike anything else in antiquity. We have thousands of copies and pieces of bits of the New Testament, and they start from the earliest days. And what that means is Paul's able to write in 1 Corinthians in the middle of the first century, hey, we're writing this stuff to you down now, but there's still people alive. He says a few of them have died, but most of the people that we're talking about as witnesses to the resurrection are still alive. Go and talk to them yourself. So this was all being passed around as true at a time when you could actually go and speak to the bloke whose name and address is, that's where Jesus was buried, the officials who were involved, the named eyewitnesses. So it's attested in a way that general historians would say this, there's nothing else like the New Testament in that way. They don't all become Christians off the back of that. And some extraordinary PhDs have been written where people in all seriousness conclude Jesus must have had some sort of evil twin, you know, because these people definitely saw it. These guys definitely saw something afterwards, and there's no other explanation. So start there with those New Testament manuscripts. That really is the basis for it. But think that the historical basis matters, please, yeah.
And there's another question which kind of follows on the back of that, saying, I've looked at the historical evidence behind Jesus, his existence, the resurrection, but I'm still unable to believe it or see it as real. How can I actually believe it as being true and be truly convinced?
Yeah, well, I think don't give up that search. It sounds like you're compelled enough to want to keep investigating, so I'd encourage you to keep doing that. Have you read all the Gospels? There's a good little book called The Case for Christ, something like that. Might just help you look at some of the historical factors around why the Gospels are so attested. The Case for Christ, Lee Strobel. So encourage that book, but keep reading the Gospels, basically.
Great. There are a couple of questions sort of around what happens to people who perhaps have never had the chance to hear of Jesus and his resurrection. What happens if people just haven't had access to that?
Yeah. That is a big question and a really important question. There was something about children. I think there's a difference between children and then just adults who haven't heard about Jesus. So in the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy, there's something about a kind of age of innocence whereby the infants who rebelled against God when they left Egypt were not treated in the same way as the adults who had rebelled against them. And it uses the language of them not understanding right from wrong yet. God knows the difference. God is just. The problem is Romans 1 also says that all of us have been given enough information to know that God's out there and things, but that we've suppressed the truth about God and worshipped idols instead of the real God. That's everyone in the world, and everyone's accountable for that. So in a sense, everyone knows enough to be accountable. Not everyone knows enough to be saved. So the book of Acts says there's no other name under heaven by which people can be saved than Jesus. And whatever you think about that, just bear in mind that the apostles who were saying that, it was not a badge of doctrinal correctness. They were spending themselves and ultimately died to take the message of Jesus around the world because they believed that there was no other name under heaven by which people around the world could be saved. Christian mission for the last 2,000 years has been founded on the conviction that people are lost outside of Christ. So part of the answer is, let's not keep it at the theoretical level. Let's re-energize and recommit to be involved in world mission. You know, it really matters. People really need to hear Christ. That's why Wycliffe Bible translators are trying to get it into every language on the globe, because they think it really matters. There's definitely stories of, you know, in some countries, Muslim countries, people having, dreams and visions, but then that are followed up with the actual Christian missionaries show up and they're able to work out what that was about. So I don't know everything, you know, I want to always say that on these question times, but I take it that our job as the church is based on what we know, that there's no other name under heaven by which people can be saved. Well, let's, you know, the Piccadilly line, you can get to Heathrow Airport pretty quick, you know, and that's a bit of a flippant thing to say, but please let's be a church that commits to world mission together.
Obviously, this is to do with real people, and there's a question about how do we grieve those that have died who aren't professing Christians?
Yeah, thank you. So, our non-Christian friends, yeah, I mean, you can always give thanks for, there's always a life to give thanks for, you know, so we can give thanks to God for the good in any life. I think this is the hardest thing. This must be one of the toughest things. It's really the pits. And I'm sorry if this is something that you're living with at the moment, as many others actually at Euston Church are. I think I want to say, don't feel guilty that it's something that makes you kind of, oh, you know, God, I'm struggling to make sense of this. Wrestle, lean into God in how you feel about grieving non-Christian friends. Be willing to trust God, I think, with, and ask him for grace to trust him with what is essentially an unknown. You don't know where they were at when they died spiritually. I mean, if there's anything that's going to make the most hardened person decide to ask their maker for mercy, surely the moment of dying would be that moment. So we're asking God for grace to be able to live with what is an unknown for us. And then I want to say, fix your eyes on Jesus, and we have to keep reminding ourselves why we can trust that he is good. I think as well, if this is a family situation, in some ways that's the hardest thing, but also bear in mind, if you're experiencing this because you're maybe the first one to become a Christian in your family, that's a good thing that's happened. The gospel has broken into a family where it wasn't there before. And as in Thessalonica, where some of them turned to God from idols, maybe granny and granddad didn't. And so it would have been tough for them in the church there. And Jesus always wants us to refocus not so much on the people who are gone, we don't know, but to focus on those who are left. So that's ourselves and your other family, to be urgently, prayerfully trying to call them to respond to the gospel. Yeah, but it's really tough, that one.
There's a question here. What does it actually mean to have a hope in Jesus's death and resurrection? What if you feel unable to feel that hope at the moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. So grief is different, and how we feel about our future with Jesus will feel different, partly in the circumstances of our lives, partly because of the way that we're wired. So I don't think it's about a particular feeling that we might feel at any given moment, but it is a sort of joy, our Christian hope. It does make a difference in every situation. I think maybe the key is, are we, look back to the end of chapter 1, the Thessalonians had turned from the idols to God, to serve him and to wait for his son Jesus from heaven. So I think that's the most important thing to say every day, is not how do I feel about it, but am I someone who is actively turning away from the idols? I want to point to Christ. I want to serve you, God, and I want to wait for Jesus. And please help me to feel, you know, it's all right to say, help me to feel the joy of and the blessing of this precious hope, to know that there's life in the future, to know that he's coming. Ask him to make a difference in how that makes you feel.
And I wonder if this question also would help with that. So in what ways can we be helping one another, encouraging one another?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. I mean, that's where Paul lands, isn't it? Verse 18, as you've written down in your question. I think the first thing I want to say is, see it as your responsibility to do that. I mean, whoever you've asked that question, you clearly do. It's so interesting in 1 Thessalonians that everything Paul said about his own ministry and character in the first half of the letter, he asks them to copy in the second half of the letter. So it's not just have a vicar, have a Paul figure who's reminding you of this stuff. No, you Thessalonians, it's all of your job to encourage and urge one another on in these truths. So I guess the question is, it's a bigger question really about whether you do that in your life generally, isn't it? Are you in situations and habits where you're encouraging other Christians and prayerfully praying in the truth of the gospel to each other's life. I mean, there's no one way that that particularly looks. But I think the main thing I'd want to say is catch a vision for that being your job, to serve your brothers and sisters in love by talking to them about these things, and as they try to serve you by talking about these things. Don't wait till someone's in grief. People can't process things in the shock of grief. Let's be a church family who are grounded in these realities so that when those painful days come, we've got that conviction and hope clear.